This presentation has been previously broadcast.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
In Japan, they are planning to name and shame quarantine rule breakers. This is from Reuters. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. The number is 888-914-9149. Japan has carried out a threat to publicly shame people for not complying with the coronavirus border control measures, releasing the names of people who broke quarantine rules after returning from overseas. The health ministry said late on Monday that three Japanese nationals named had clearly acted to avoid contact with authorities after recently returning from abroad. The announcement, the first of its kind, sparked a flurry of speculation on social media about the details of those who are identified, such as their jobs and their locations, like where do they live. Japan is asking all travelers from overseas, including its own citizens, to self-quarantine for 2 weeks, during which they are asked to use a location tracking smartphone app and report on their health condition. So that has to do with, you know, your movements. Now, this is Japan, but I want to bring it a little closer to home now and have you listen to Dr. Anthony Fauci.
We've seen Florida Republican Governor DeSantis, Republican Governor Abbott of Texas, Governor Ducey in Arizona push back strongly against the notion of mask requirements. Let me read you a quote from Governor Ducey in Arizona. He said, Arizona does not allow mask mandates, vaccine passports, or discrimination in schools based on who is or isn't vaccinated. They are arguing that this is individual responsibility and an individual's right to decide. What is your answer to these are Republican governors in some of the largest states in our country?
Well, John, I disagree with them. I respectfully disagree with them. The fact is, there are things that are individual responsibilities that one has, and there are things that have to do with you individually, which also impact others. And the spread of infection that we're seeing now, the surge in cases, John, is impacting everyone in the country. So although you want to respect a person's individual right, when you're dealing with a public health situation, and we are in fact in a very serious public health challenge here with a pandemic, with a virus that has an extraordinary capability of spreading rapidly and efficiently from person to person. So a person's individual decision to not wear a mask not only impacts them, because if they get infected, even though they say it's my decision, if I get infected, I'll worry about that. But the fact is, if you get infected, even if you are without symptoms, you very well may infect another person who may be vulnerable, who may get seriously ill. So in essence, you are encroaching on their individual rights because you're making them vulnerable. So you could argue that situation both ways.
All right. You are encroaching on their individual rights. And I understand that. I understand the logic. In fact, that's the same logic that I apply in a conversation with somebody who's in favor of abortion. I touched upon this yesterday. Just briefly, let me just recap that. My body, my choice, right? So when you're talking about the immunization, and here you're hearing Dr. Fauci, in essence, saying, you know, you really don't have an individual right that trumps somebody else's rights. In other words, the collective is more important than your individual rights, which is, of course, radically opposed to the notion with regard to abortion, my body, my choice. And when you say the same thing, well, it's not just your body that is affected in an abortion. There's another body that's affected, and that body happens to be dead by the time it's over. Well, my body, my choice. Yeah, but there's another, it doesn't matter. So they reject what Anthony Fauci just said a second ago. There is truth to it, and I want to emphasize that. But you'll notice that it's only really true in the minds of many people when it comes to you got to get the shot or you've got to quarantine or you have to toe the line because of COVID because you are putting other people at risk. But when you point out that the very same thing is taking place with regard to abortion, they won't hear it. Just note that, be aware of that, and you can actually deploy that in a conversation. Now let's listen to Dr. Lena Wen, formerly the Queen of Corpse Mountain, a.k.a. Planned Parenthood. They bounced her after 9 months, and we talked about that yesterday. You may remember that she's revealed now that she was bounced out of Planned Parenthood because, A, she wouldn't talk about abortion as much as they wanted her to. Abortion, 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 abortion. We want more abortion. Can you talk about abortion more, please? And she wouldn't do it. So that was one strike. And then the other strike was that they told her, well, you know, just, you know, well, I shouldn't say that this was a strike in her leaving, but as she was leaving, they told her, well, you should tell the public that the reason you're leaving is you had a miscarriage. And that was not the reason she was leaving. So in any case, this is that same Lena Wen. And she's talking here about vaccine mandates, COVID, of course. And this is kind of an evolving story. So every so often, I want to return to it so you can see what is being said or hear what is being said and get a sense of how it may affect you and your children. So this is her being interviewed on the news talking about vaccine mandates, as in you don't have a choice. If this were to happen, you would not have a choice. You would have to get the vaccine if you didn't want it. Most people, a slight majority, have already been vaccinated. There are those, however, who do not want to be vaccinated, and they have their reasons. And this is what Lena Wen had to say about that.
Is it too late at this point to get to herd immunity? And what will that even look like, I guess, now?
It's going to be much harder, frankly, with the Delta variant, and that's because the Delta variant is so much more contagious. If you have a more contagious virus, you're also going to need a higher threshold of people who are vaccinated or who have immunity in some way in order to reach herd immunity. I don't think it's too late. I do think that it's time, though, for vaccine mandates. We have seen that the other methods that we're using, including with incentives, with education and outreach, yes, they are convincing some people, but there is a huge middle group, if you will, that's not yet moved. But we know based on polling that if there are requirements, that these individuals will get vaccinated. And I think it's time for us to do that in the interest of the public's health.
They have ways of making you get vaccinated. So in essence, as I hear what she's saying, in other words, the carrot didn't work, so now comes the stick. You know, get ready for the stick because that's, you know, we offered you the carrot. And you didn't take the carrot, so here comes the stick. That's what she's saying. That I think that's where this is headed. Okay, so now, Jim, roll the audio. This is Press Secretary Jen Psaki, and she's speaking about the former El Presidente Obama. He's having a 60th birthday party. And, you know, hey, happy birthday. And he's going to invite a lot of people. I think it's upwards of like 700 people are going to be at this lavish birthday party. And I'm not criticizing that at all. I have nothing critical to say whatsoever about that. Let the man celebrate his 60th birthday. Hip, hip, hooray. I'm okay with it. But we live in the era of COVID, don't we? Don't we? And you have to now, by the way, McDonald's just announced that you have to wear a mask if you go inside McDonald's. That's starting now. And you have to do certain things, and there's things you can't do, places you can't go, you have to wear a mask, okay, fine, whatever. But the question is being asked, well, what about this lavish birthday party for El Presidente? And what about all the 700 people who are going to be crammed into his estate on Martha's Vineyard? I mean, will they be wearing masks? What's going to happen here? So the question that's being asked is about that event that's upcoming. So let's listen to what Jen Psaki says.
Okay, and then just about COVID safety. Is President Obama setting the wrong example about how serious COVID-19 is by hosting a big birthday party with hundreds of people this week?
Well, I would certainly refer you to the team who is working for my former boss to give you more specifics of what the protocols are in place. But I would note first that former President Obama has been a huge advocate of individuals getting vaccinated. When CDC has provided what CDC CDC has provided guidance on is for indoor settings in high or substantial high zones of COVID cases.
Jim, pause. Thank you. I have to intervene. Just listen to this non-response. There's a torrent of words that she's giving, none of which answers the question. You know, do you think that he's sending the wrong message? Is this a good example to the American people to have this gigantic party? It's a super spreader event. She's just mouthing words and syllables, and none of it really answers the question. So let's continue.
Events, according to all the public reporting, is outdoors and in a moderate zone. But in addition, there is testing requirements and other steps they are taking, which I'm sure they can outline for you in more detail.
But is there any concern, just because, as you've said here, and you've had people saying over the last couple of days, vaccinated people can still spread this Delta variant around. So is there concern that this President Obama birthday party might become a super spreader event?
Well, I think, Peter, the guidance is about what steps people can take when they're in public settings. Indoor settings specifically was the new guidance to keep themselves and others safe. In terms of what protocols they are taking, I would refer you to them, and I'm sure they can give you more details.
And just last one. So people who are watching this at home and they see, well, President Obama can have a party with several hundred people, should they think that it is okay for them to have a party with several hundred people now?
Well, we certainly advise everyone to follow public health guidelines, which I know the former president, who is a huge advocate of getting vaccinated, of following the guidance of public health experts, would certainly advocate for himself as well.
She is the master of a non-answer. There was no answer in there anywhere. And that was a great follow-up question, by the way. Who was it? Was that Peter Ducey? I think it was. So a great follow-up question. So if El Presidente can have a 60th birthday party with 700 people, probably most all of whom have been vaccinated, can I have a big party like that? Can you have a big party like that? Can Cyrus have a big party like that? And if so, then great. But if not, why not? You know, why can't Cyrus have a 700-person birthday party? Why can't he have it if El Presidente can have it? You know, where's the logic in that? So just be aware. I wonder if he'll have anyone sing Happy Birthday, Mr. President. I know, who knows? So here's the fourth one, then we'll move on. This is also Jen Psaki, and she's referring now to a topic that came up on the program in the last few days about the countless people, well over 1.5 million people who have come into the United States from our southern border, through our southern border. And lingering questions remain about, as these people are being dispersed into different parts of the country, are any of them vaccinated? Because obviously, as you heard Lena Wen say, we tried the carrot with you American citizens, and for those of you who didn't accept the carrot for getting a vaccine, now comes the stick. And I think they mean to beat people with that stick. What about the immigrants? What about the folk who are coming up from Honduras and El Salvador and Mexico and elsewhere, and they're coming into the country? And are they getting vaccinated? Are they even being tested? Well, this question was posed in yesterday's press conference, and here's what Jen Psaki said.
About public health at the border, is the president concerned that migrants who are coming in great numbers are not being tested for COVID at their first point of contact with Border Patrol?
Well, let me give you a little bit of an understanding of what actually happens when people come across the border. First, as to Katie's earlier question, there's been no change in Title 42, so families and single adults are expelled, if possible, when apprehended at the southern border. That's step one. Those who can't be expelled are often placed, and this, is, I think, goes to your question, in alternatives to detention programs while their cases are being reviewed. CBP provides migrants with PPE from the moment they are taken into custody, and migrants are required to keep masks on at all times, including when they are transferred or in the process of being released. Our other protocol is if anyone exhibits signs of illness in CBP custody, they're referred to local health systems for appropriate testing, diagnosis, isolation, and treatment. That is our process.
All right. I kind of didn't hear an answer to the bigger question about why are American citizens, those at least who have not yet received their vaccination, why are they being increasingly hammered by the government? And yet there doesn't seem to be that level of attention, for lack of a better word, given to the immigrants who are coming into the country. This seems to be an anomaly wouldn't you say? 888-914-9149. So I just wanted to get you up to date on those details, and we'll continue to update you as things unfold. 888-914-9149. Why don't we go to Michael in Albuquerque. Hello, Michael. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Patrick. I just had a question about a parish I've been attending. It is it's the Byzantine Rite Church. I understand it's completely under the Pope and united with the Catholic Church. I started attending it, but I myself am a baptized Roman Catholic, and that particular parish is the primary one I go to. I really enjoy the liturgy. I like all the practices, the pre-sanctified liturgies during Lent, the Advocates to the Theotokos. All those particular devotions really do appeal to me. However, I did see that they were offering classes in Eastern Christian formation, but I myself did not see any necessity for myself to, in essence, leave the Roman Church and join their particular church for any reason. And I was just wondering, what would ever be a reason for a Roman Catholic to want to become a Byzantine Catholic if there's no restrictions for us to attend their liturgy and practice their devotions?
Well, I want to make sure I understand your question. Why would you change rites? Is that what you're asking? What would be a reason?
Yes, and would I ever need to?
No. Let's start there. No, you don't need to change rites. You are a Roman Rite Catholic, and therefore you are under the jurisdiction of your local Roman Rite Catholic bishop. But you are free to attend and even register as a parishioner, if you wish, at a Byzantine Rite parish. My wife and I did exactly that. For 3 years, we were registered parishioners at Holy Angels Byzantine Parish. It was a Ruthenian Byzantine parish in San Diego. And so we were there for 3 years, and we lived more or less according to their customs. There were a few things that we didn't do. They are much more stringent in their Lenten fasting and practices, and we were probably not tough enough to handle what they do. So we retained our more minimalistic Roman Rite way or Latin Rite way of observing Lent. But in any case, you're free to go exclusively, if you wish, to the Divine Liturgy at that church, and you don't have to change rites. Now, where that becomes an issue is, let's say that you married a woman who is a Byzantine Rite Catholic. Well, canonically, the church stipulates that any children that are born to you and your Byzantine Rite wife would automatically be Latin Rite Catholics. Now, they could change rites if they wanted to, and that's permitted. So if you decided that you'd like to change rites and officially be a Byzantine Rite Catholic, you have that freedom to do so. But chances are pretty good that you could never actually change back again. So you couldn't come back to the Latin Rite unless there's some unusual circumstance. But there's no compelling reason that I can see anyway for you to change rites. You have the freedom to enjoy it as a Latin Rite Catholic, and it kind of decomplicates things that way, we found anyway.
Well, that's good. I wasn't sure if I was doing something wrong by attending exclusively the Divine Liturgy.
Not at all.
As opposed to, all right. Well, that was my question. Thank you very much, Patrick.
You got it. Thank you. Years ago, this was back in 1997, I wrote an article for the New Oxford Review, and the article was called A Big Blast of Smells and Bells, and it was my take on what it was like for us for those 3 years to be in a Byzantine Rite church and what we thought of the liturgy and everything else about it. And so I don't know if that article is floating around out there. It may be available online, but if you look it up, Patrick Madrid, A Big Blast of Smells and Bells, that was my commentary on our experience doing that. I hope it's helpful. By the way, I heard that a person called and is cross with me because I referred to President Obama as El Presidente. All right, let me set the record straight. It is not derogatory. It's not intended to be derogatory. And for that matter, I have called all the various presidents, regardless of their political party, at one time or another, el presidente. Did I say that about Trump? Yes, I did. Have I said it about Biden? Yes, I have. Have I said it about President Obama? Yes, I have. Have I said it about Ronald Reagan? Yes, I have. Okay, so I don't understand the angst surrounding using the Spanish word for the president, el presidente. There's nothing offensive intended about it. So the people who are worked up, and apparently there's just one who called in, just ease up, okay? Ease up. You don't have to read something negative into something and assume the worst. This is playful stuff. That's all. So ease up. Lighten up. 888-914-9149. Let's go to, you know what? I take that back. Let's go to a break, and then we'll come back to the phones. 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. I am the El Presidente of this show, and I love it. And I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
All right, we're back. 888-914-9149. A couple quick things from Twitter. Where did he go? He was just here a second ago. Okay, yeah. Bill Moody says, Senator Lindsey Graham's testing positive for his second case of COVID after spending a trip with all vaccinated people seems to contradict the premise that near 100% vaccination will end the pandemic. I agree. I mean, they'll say, well, this is the variant, the Delta variant. Okay, but I mean, isn't that the whole point of the vaccine? So this is another one of those strange anomalies with regard to COVID. Also, had a question that came in on a theological topic. This is from T. Boone McCracken. He says, Patrick, if we can think prayers to God and he hears them, can the saints hear our prayers in our mind to ask them for their intercession? Or is it God who listens to our silent prayers asking for the intercession of the saints? Well, look at it this way. In this life, because we are bodily beings, we are a soul and a body united as one, we use our corporeal organs like our mouths to speak. So when we speak, we use language. We communicate our thoughts through words and also in writing. And those are merely symbols. That slows the process down. So when I say lasagna, or in honor of Taco Tuesday, taco, that sound, taco, if I were to say that in, you know, China, it probably, I'm guessing, wouldn't mean anything. It would just be a sound. In other parts of the world, taco has meaning. But you see, the word is a symbol. It symbolizes the idea or the reality of the taco. And the same is true when we write. The little squiggles on the paper, those are symbols. So because we're corporeal beings, we have to use our senses and we speak and we so forth. But that's not how God is. God is a pure spirit, of course. But even the angels, they don't communicate that way either. In the case of the angels, and this is, it seems is true of the saints as well, they communicate by opening their minds to each other. So opening your mind and revealing your thoughts to somebody in a heavenly sense is instantaneous and complete, and it's not prone to misunderstanding because the thoughts are not conveyed by symbols. They are made present, and I know this is hard for us to understand, but that's how the angels are. That's how God is. And it seems that the saints are that way too, because Jesus said that there's great rejoicing in heaven when even one sinner repents. Now, imagine that at any given moment, there are any number of people, perhaps millions of people, maybe tens or hundreds of millions of people who are repenting at any given moment. And although Jesus doesn't explain how the saints and angels in heaven know this, he tells us that they do, even individual repentances. So to your question, no, God is not, I mean, God obviously is listening to all of our prayers because there's nothing that can be known that God doesn't know. But the prayers are indeed heard by the angels and the saints in a way that we don't understand. So whether you are moving your lips and audibly saying something, or if you're thinking the thoughts in your mind, the fact that you are making the act of your will to open your mind to express this thought, please pray for me, for example, to the Blessed Virgin Mary. By God's permission, she can hear that in a way that we don't fully understand, but we know that it happens. And it's not because you are, in other words, Our Lady or any of the saints, don't think of it as if they can't hear your prayers if you're not speaking out loud. You don't have to speak out loud for them to hear you. So anyway, I'll leave it at that. It's a very good question, and it's something that I think most of us think about from one time or another. Thank you. Let's go back to the phone. Let's go to Mary now in Chicago. Good morning, Mary.
Hi, Patrick. I wanted to speak your point about the anomaly that's out there with super spreader events being allowed, like Lollapalooza, the president having his birthday. And so all those things that are being allowed, but yet we're hearing Fauci and others saying that we're probably headed back to more restrictions because this virus, this variant is on the loose.
Right.
So if you look back at last year and how the Catholic Church, we closed, we were more than compliant. I think we wanted to portray that we were compliant, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see, this is my first question, if we revisit those restrictions, if the church will be able to survive that? The second question I have,
well, let's pause there. Because, let's pause there. So you say, could the church survive another lockdown? I guess I'm
abbreviating what you're saying. Yeah, because it looks like they want to go that way. But right now they're fast and free with, all these other things. Because really, if you look back last year, civil rights leaders were able to have funerals. We weren't. You could name them all the things we couldn't do that they could do. And I've written it down here, but it doesn't matter. You know what they are. So it's for them and not us. But the church seems to want to be very, just compliant. I can't think of another word. Can you? We want to be portrayed that we're on the side of science as well. But yet, I don't think we put up much resistance to still, meeting. I myself went to daily mass. I masked up. And when the vaccine came, I was rejoicing. I took it very quickly. So that's the number one thing, because I just am very concerned about us not making it through. There's so many things against us on the plate, number one, but this could be like a nail in the coffin.
Okay, let's pause there. So remember that Jesus said, upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. He said, the wise man is the one who hears these words of mine and does them. He is like a man who builds his house upon a rock. And when the wind and the rain and the floods burst against it, it does not fall, for it has been built solidly on a rock. Jesus said in Matthew 28, 19 and 20, he said, behold, I'm with you always, even until the end of the world. So these are just a few of those promises made by the Lord that the church is indestructible. Now, I suspect you're referring to the church here in the United States, but I think it's good to take a step back and say the church as such will never be overcome by anything, by decree, by command of our sovereign King, Jesus Christ. So it will never happen. But at a local level, it certainly could happen. So if that's your question, in other words, if you're asking, do I think that this could happen in the United States? Well, no, I don't think it could happen here either. I think there are far too many faithful Catholics, far too many devout, faithful Catholic priests and bishops as well. Now, that's not the majority of Catholics, perhaps. It's not the majority of any given group, but there are sufficient numbers, I think, that could, no matter what happened, could withstand that. So if there's another lockdown and we can't get to mass, I really don't think that would or could destroy the church in the United States. Now, it could destroy the faith. Sorry to say, it could destroy the commitment of some Catholics who might be lost along the way, which would be a terrible loss, but not the church herself. Do you see the distinction I'm making?
I do. And actually, you're kind of allaying my fears a lot. I'm glad I called you because I was getting myself a little worked up here. So I'm glad that you brought that to mind, and I should have actually been thinking on those lines myself, you know, had more faith. So
I say that to fault you. I mean, because it's these are times when people can easily get jittery. I understand. Mm-hmm. I totally understand.
Right. And so the other thing is, I was wondering if, because I don't know if there's really data out there to support this, but do you think that the bulk of the unvaccinated people are actually conservatives, as the media's narrative is trying to make it look like a bunch of uneducated, you know, conservative people who don't know, you know, science at all are not getting vaxxed, you know?
I had some statistics in that I shared on the show, and let me see if I can locate them, because it was fairly recent, and it showed that even though there is a preponderance among those who have not been vaccinated by choice, in other words, they say I don't plan to get vaccinated, I'm not going to get vaccinated, there was a small but significant percentage of those who identified as Democrats or liberals who also were not vaccinated.
Right.
But it's much smaller.
Okay.
Yeah. I just don't have those details in front of me.
Okay. And now this is my third thing that I wanted to talk to you about. And you and I probably might disagree with this. So I see parallels between pro-choice women who say my it's my choice, my body, and people who don't get vaccinated. I feel like they feel like it's my choice, my body. Government's not going to tell me what to do with my body. And I hear that from liberal, you know, very progressive women. And in both of those, I feel that there's wrongfulness and selfishness in those. Because like I say to my kids, like, I listen to a lot of stuff, a lot of conversations about the vaccination, and these are my words I say to them, blah, 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 get vaccinated, and then we could go on to the next, you know, issue.
So let me jump in. I don't disagree with you, and you're raising a valid point that there is a direct comparison between somebody saying my body, my choice with regard to abortion and my body, my choice with regard to COVID. But I suspect, Mary, that you and I would agree that as a general principle, you do have the rights and the autonomy to govern your body. Now, there are some circumstances where, you know, you don't. You can't use your body to harm somebody else, and there are limits to our autonomy. But as a general principle, I think that we do have that autonomy. And so there's nothing wrong with saying my body, my choice. It's rather, what are the circumstances in which you're asserting that? And so in the case of abortion, the circumstances, they militate in the direction of killing another person, which obviously is an area in which you can't ultimately assert your bodily autonomy if it's going to take the life of an innocent human being. And there is a direct parallel between that and COVID. I grant that. So we do agree on this issue.
I just thought that I wanted to kind of address that out there, because I know you speak to people across the nation who are devout Catholics and who are, you know, who are pro-life as I am, and very much so, and speak about it all the time. But yet, I think, and I'm just saying, I wish they would consider it. Just consider this little argument that you and I just discussed.
Yeah, I certainly do. I take that to heart. Now, here's, if I can play devil's advocate for them, Mary. Consider the fact that, you know, here we saw Senator Lindsey Graham. He just tested positive for COVID. He's been fully vaccinated. And we're seeing that there's a huge number of people who have been fully vaccinated, or at least partially vaccinated, who are getting COVID. So one of the questions that you can't help, I mean, you can't fault people for asking this question, is then why am I getting vaccinated? Now, I know that the standard stock answer is because if you get vaccinated, you're far less likely to be hospitalized. You're far less likely to die. And I get all that, and I don't argue with any of those points. But, you know, people who suddenly die after getting vaccinated, otherwise healthy people, they get vaccinated and then a day or two later they die. Children, teenagers, people who are fit and in good health, these strange sudden deaths that are associated, it seems, with the vaccine. I don't think it's unreasonable for somebody to just say, if I get vaccinated and I can still get COVID, and there's the possibility, you know, it's very slight numerically or statistically, it's very small. I mean, I can't help but, I mean, I don't fault people for saying maybe, you know, maybe should I do this or should I not do this? I don't think they're being unreasonable. And I can understand where they're coming from. So
I can too. Right. Yeah. I can too. I just wish they would think about that a little more, and maybe it will be a light bulb comes on that says the more of us who get vaccinated, then the chance of it even being out there still is probably going to be very low. It's just
I don't think so, though. I mean, look at what's going on right now. Lindsey Graham is a good example. I mean, a vast number of people have been vaccinated, thankfully, and yet they're still getting COVID. So it's a strange aspect of all this. And by the way, Mary, I'll leave you with this thought. I know many people for whom this is, you know, a deal breaker. They're not going to get vaccinated. And they've told me, I'm not going to get vaccinated. No matter what, I'm not going to get vaccinated. And I know, I can assure you, Mary, these people, this is practically all they think about. They're thinking about it constantly, and they're researching it, and they're reading and, you know, listening, and they've come to that conclusion. So I'm here to tell you that some of the people, maybe many of them, it's practically all they think about. It's not like they're not thinking about it. They're, in some cases, even obsessed with it. Thank you, Mary. Fascinating conversation. I appreciate your phone call. I have to take a break, but we'll be right back with more right after this. The programming you hear throughout the day on the Relevant Radio Network is sponsored in part by Christendom College. More info at getprinciples.com. We thank them for supporting Relevant Radio.
At the intersection of faith and culture, the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, I've got something for you. I think this is really cool, personally. This is some Walmart news. And I want to thank a friend of mine who made me aware of this. Walmart is going to pay 100% for their employees' college tuition and books in their education program. So here's how it's being reported here by KNWA in Bentonville, Arkansas. Walmart announced that it will pay for 100% of college tuition and books for its employees through its Live Better U, or LBU, education program. Previously, employees paid a dollar a day fee for access to LBU. Starting August 16th, that fee will be removed for approximately 1.5 million part-time and full-time employees at Walmart and Sam's Club, allowing them to earn college degrees or learn trade skills without taking on any additional debt. And Walmart tweeted this. They said, "Our Live Better U program just got better. We're proud to announce we will now pay 100% of college tuition and books for our associates seeking additional education, a planned investment of nearly $1 billion over the next 5 years. Walmart said that they are committed to doing this. They said this investment is another way we can support our associates to pursue their passion and purpose while removing the barriers that too often keep adult working learners from obtaining degrees. Since LBU launched in 2018, more than 52,000 employees have participated in the program. 8,000 have graduated. Nearly 28,000 employees have been active in an LBU program this summer, according to Walmart. The company is also adding 4 new academic partners, including Johnson & Wales University, the University of Arizona, the University of Denver. Walmart has existing partnerships with Brandman University, Penn Foster, Purdue University Global, Southern New Hampshire University, and several others. Walmart says each was chosen for their history of success with adult and working learner programs, as well as their focus on degree completion. So you ask me, I think this is great news. And I mean, they're investing $1 billion. That's $1 billion that they could have kept for the shareholders and such. Although I don't know if it's a public, I guess it is a public company. I forget. But I like that and I welcome that. And so to the extent that anyone listening right now is working for Walmart, you now have a free education at your fingertips. Without the debt, which I guess is the nature of free, isn't it? 888-914-9149. Let's go to Rosemary now in Alpena, Michigan. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello. Hi, Patrick. I have a comment, but I also want your input on this.
Okay.
And I hate to keep bringing up the COVID-19 vaccine, but...
That's okay. Everybody's thinking about it. Everybody's talking about it. So I said everybody's thinking about it and talking about it, so why shouldn't we, right?
Dr. Fauci and others keep bringing up, you know, and Dr. Fauci keeps giving a confusing message as far as I'm concerned, when he says that an unvaccinated person, kind of like you're a bad person if you're unvaccinated because you can give the COVID to somebody else. But when I can't wrap my head around the logic of what difference does it make if you are vaccinated or not vaccinated, as to giving, you know, spreading the COVID, it doesn't seem to make a difference. So
it doesn't seem to.
I am vaccinated. Pardon?
No, I'm agreeing with you. In other words, it doesn't seem to make a difference. We see, for example, I mentioned earlier, Senator Lindsey Graham, he's been diagnosed with COVID. He's been fully vaccinated. So what I understand the response to be is, okay, well, yeah, you can get COVID and you can spread it to other people. But if you get it, you will not be severely, or the likelihood of you being severely harmed by it is much lower. So the benefit at this point, it seems like the maybe even the only benefit, as far as I can tell, is that if you get COVID again after you've been vaccinated, it just won't be a bad case of it. And even though it's possible you could go to the hospital and it's possible that you could die, the likelihood goes way down. At least that's what they're telling us now. So that seems to be the current message that we're hearing.
Right. And I, you know, if you do get vaccinated, it likely won't be as bad. You know, you won't suffer as much. But they keep saying, like, if you're unvaccinated, you're a bad person, you're inconsiderate because you're going to spread it. But it shouldn't matter. You can spread it whether you're vaccinated or not.
That's the point. You're right. It's one of the head scratchers of this whole thing. You know, we've got to get everyone vaccinated, they say. Okay. And then people who are getting vaccinated are getting COVID and spreading COVID. So it's a natural question for people to ask. Then why do I have to get vaccinated? What's in it for me?
Right. Okay. Well, I just wanted your input on that.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I'm scratching my head like most people. I mean, maybe like some people. I think other people, they're just, you know, they're maybe not thinking about it as much as they should. But those are my thoughts. Thanks, Rosemary. I appreciate your phone call. Let's go now to Trina in Nisita, Wisconsin. Hi, Trina.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
And
the reason I'm calling is because I am a nurse, and I looked at the National Catholic Bioethics Center information, and I found a vaccine exemption template letter there that has detailed references. So I just wanted to share that with the listeners because I know my healthcare system will be mandating vaccinations, and that this letter is very well written. And I think it will allow me to be exempt.
Yeah, for the time being anyway. My prediction, Trina, is that all of our discussions about this and exemptions will only be here for a time. And I think that there will be a mandate in which the government will forcibly require everybody to be vaccinated in due time. It just seems trending in that direction. But if that gives you some, you know, something to use if you've chosen not to be vaccinated, It'll be interesting to see how well that's received or whether or not that's accepted. Do you have any sense of how that will go down in your industry, in your employment?
I think this one has teeth. I did speak to a colleague who in the past has been exempt from vaccinations for religious reasons, and she actually went to attorney to have something written so that it would be accepted by the hospital. So yeah, it'll be interesting, as you said. Thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Trina. Great to talk to you. Thank you. We'll go to Pilar now in New Mexico. Hi, Pilar.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
And happy Tuesday, Taco Tuesday to you.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have a conflicting issue going on in my heart with myself. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you just fine.
Oh, okay. I started attending SSPX, and I've heard you talk about SSPX a few times. I think I know how you feel about it, but I had to call and get advice about this because it's really tearing my heart between, I have a great Novus Ordo mass that, well, the parish and the priest, he's great. I really do love him. He's a great priest, great homilies, all of that stuff. But recently I'm on Twitter, Catholic Twitter. I follow a lot. And I fell in love with the Latin Mass. And I started looking around. I'm in New Mexico. We have a very, how can I put it, modernist archbishop.
Let me ask you a question, Pilar, just in the interest of time, because we're getting close to the top of the hour. Could you boil this down to your question for me?
What do I do? I don't know what to do. The Novus Ordo or SSPX. I want to do a Latin Mass, but we don't have one.
Okay. Well, I personally do not recommend going to the SSPX just because of the many problems that they have and their unusual circumstances. It's not really clear to me exactly canonically where they stand. They're obviously in an irregular situation. They don't accept the authority of the local bishop. Think what you may about any given bishop. The fact is, he has that authority to govern the church in his diocese, and the SSPX doesn't accept that. So that, plus the fact that, at least in my dealings with them, there tends to be a very toxic sort of atmosphere and disdain, even bordering on hatred and contempt for all the other Catholics in the church who don't go to the traditional Latin Mass that they do. I don't think that that's helpful. I don't want to breathe that air. I think it would be corrosive for anybody to go there. And I've seen that happen. So I don't mean to say that every person going to the SSPX chapels is that way, but enough of them are that I think it poses a real health risk to the spiritual health of Catholics who go there who love the traditional Latin Mass. And I do. I love the traditional Latin Mass. And I'm very sympathetic to some of the concerns that the SSPX has, but I think they went about it the wrong way. So I do not encourage people to go there for those reasons. Now, I suspect there probably are some traditional Latin Masses available. You just don't know about them. And you can look it up. So latinmass.org, I think, is one website that gives a listing of them nationally. So that might be a place that you can look, and you might be surprised that there is one closer to you that you didn't know about. I would encourage you to check that out.
I think I've been told that the only Latin Mass is in Santa Fe, and that's like 2 hours away from me. I mean, it's probably worth the drive on Sundays and many other days, I'm sure. We just can't do them. So are you saying just stick to the Novus Ordo? I mean, this weekend or last weekend, just enough of the stuff on the altar to tell me, go back to SSPX, go back to SSPX. There's, you know, it's just a beautiful mass. So that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. There's more to it than that, though, honestly. I think that there's, let's just say, the things that I was saying a minute ago, you should take that into account, I believe. And, you know, I recognize that 2 hours away is a long distance. It's a long distance. So, you know, you'd have to make the decision, how much do you love the traditional Latin Mass? Now, as I said a minute ago, I love the traditional Latin Mass. I grew up with it as an altar boy. But my wife and I, our whole married life, we have attended the new rite of the Mass parish. So we were fortunate to belong to a parish that's run by Dominican friars. And so it's a beautiful Novus Ordo Mass. It's extremely in keeping with much of tradition. And I think anybody who attends Mass there is very edified by it. But when I have the opportunity to go to the traditional Mass, I do so. But
so just bear it, right? Mm-hmm. Just stick to the Novus Ordo. Well, like I said, the priest is wonderful.
I just looked this up. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. I just looked it up. So Latin Mass Directory, so latinmassdir.org, you have two traditional Latin Masses, one in Santa Fe, you said, and then there's another one. And I don't see where that one is. But you can look it up. There are some in your striking distance. I'll leave it at that, Pilar. Thank you. God bless you. I'll be back with hour three, right after this.
Relevant Radio can always be heard loud and clear
on your smart speaker.
Listen live, listen to your favorite show whenever it fits your schedule. Access our exclusive In Conversation with God podcast, the Glenn Story Corner podcast, and more.